Hello, welcome to the Bearcats Blogcast. My name is Scott, joined, as usual, by Chris Baines. How's it going, Chris?
Hey, Scott. I'm doing pretty well. I've been up since 5:30 in the morning with a sick kid, so I'm on my third cup of coffee, and I'm just raring to go after a great week of UC hoops. Starting off, the game on Sunday at noon, national TV, one of the highest televised games on Sunday, the highest televised game in AAC basketball history. UC secured their lone conference title for the first time since, I think we talked about this last week, since 2004, by beating Wichita State in another close game, 62-61, really clamping down defensively in the last segment or two of the second half, and especially on Wichita State's final possession to secure that win and the championship. Scott, what are your thoughts of the game?
It was actually their first outright title since 2002, the Steve Logan team.
2002, even better.
It's just like even crazier. It doesn't seem like it's been that long since UC won an outright title, except it was. It's kind of hard to believe in a way. But, yeah, it was like a really great win. Like, it was a tremendous game throughout. Very close the whole entire way, with like neither team really pulling away. And then the Bearcats, like, what, up, what, like six or so, like late in the game, and then Wichita State just doesn't really score the last like 5 minutes. It's like really a tremendous game. And like, as you said, the defensive effort down the stretch, just like absolutely insane. Like Wichita, I don't think got three clean shots the whole like closing stretch. The questionable final possession for Wichita, like down one, like they don't go to Landry Shamet, who had another really good game. And they don't go to Morris. They just like kind of ISO out Connor Frankamp. And like he just like hoisted up a three. But she was 0-for-4 from deep. And only 2-for-8 on the game. And then Wichita couldn't get a put back. It's like a really great win to get that title on the road. Like, yeah, I'm really happy with how that one went.
Yeah, I think for me, you know, looking at the broad picture of this, I mean, UC came out of the Wichita State game kind of shell-shocked, it seemed like. You know, Wichita State, for as much as UC was throwing at them, Wichita State could answer. And it seemed like UC was playing catch-up for most of that game. Not so much on Sunday. I mean, UC was really dictating the pace of that game and the flow, and Wichita State was the one on their heels in front of a very raucous home crowd, and UC wasn't fazed by any of it. I mean, every time Wichita State made a shot, UC either answered, or they answered and got a defensive stop and scored again. Like, they were dictating the flow of that game. And then, you know, the thing we didn't see in the first matchup was defensive lockdowns, like, you know, UC clamping down, getting turnovers, turning the turnovers into points. It was one of those games that, you know, we expect to see out of Cincinnati, but it's what we didn't see in the first matchup, and to see those adjustments made by the coaching staff and the players was really impressive to see.
Yeah, like, a lot of the stuff that happened in the first game just didn't really, like, happen in the second, as you said. Like, the turnovers, like, cut way down. 13 turnovers in the first game. The Bearcats only turned the ball over 5 times in the second game. Like, Garrett Clark didn't have, like, a monster game, but he really turned it on down the stretch. Like, 10 points, he scored, like, one less point than the first game. But, like, all his baskets seemed to come late when UC really needed points to keep that lead up. Like, just a good performance by him. And, like, Jacob Evans, just ice cold the entire game. A huge three to really, I think, gave UC their final points.
And a three where he was basically hobbling up the court before he shot it. Amazing warrior effort from Jacob Evans in that game.
Yeah, like, arguably his, like, biggest and best game as a Bearcat.
Especially, how many times in the Crosstown Shootouts the last couple of years were, you know, writers saying, well, Xavier has Trayvon Blewett. Who does UC have? Why isn't Jacob Evans stepping up? And that was a game, that was a coming out game for Jacob Evans to show on national TV that he can step up against the best competition, especially if he is going to, if he's expecting to go to the NBA next year.
Like, he's had games where he's scored more, obviously, and like been like a little bit more efficient, but I don't think he had a game where he made as many big plays, like just when UC needed them, than that game against Wichita. Like, it's got tremendous performance. And as you mentioned, like, he was like banged up with a little bit of a knee injury, ankle injury, a leg injury.
Lower extremity. He couldn't, like, for a good 4 to 5 minutes, he was hobbling up and back on the court. I mean, it was basically 4-on-5 for a decent stretch of that game until he hit that three, and then, you know, Mick Cronin dragged him off the court. But, yeah, I mean, that kind of mentality is just what I love out of Jacob Evans. I'm going to be, if he goes to the NBA, which he should, if everyone's telling me he's going to be selected in the first round, if not, he's going to be one hell of a player to bring back next year.
Yeah, definitely. He's going to, like, well, I think we talked about this last time. He should definitely declare and, like, go through the whole process.
Yep.
And, like, if he comes back, great. Like, UC would probably be the league favorite again. He would be, like, the hands-on preseason player of the year.
Right.
Or, like, he goes pro and then gets his chance in the NBA. Like, he's just been so good. Like the whole, like, back half of the season. Like, as almost like the de facto point guard for this team. And the big shot taker, which was kind of something everybody wanted to see from him.
Exactly, yeah. And especially, like, he was completely unfazed on the road in that game. Gary Clark, too, you mentioned he had an excellent game. You know, you didn't really see much of it, but like down that stretch in that final possession, UC goes, or Mick Cronin, instead of going through, you know, the traditional lineup, he goes long. He goes Evans, Cumberland, Scott, Brooks, and Clark. I was a little surprised not to see Kyle Washington out there in that sequence. He had a not so good game. He was shooting way too much than he should have been. I was a little surprised to see him on the bench and Mick trust Scott and Brooks to come out there. What were your thoughts on that?
Well, he does go offense for defense for Washington a ton. So, like, in that sense, it wasn't really that big a surprise. It's like, I don't think you would say that Brooks and Scott are both better defenders than Kyle Washington.
Yeah, and I think it was, and to be clear, I completely agree with the situation. I mean, I think Kyle was getting manhandled fairly frequently by Shaq Morris underneath, but I just thought it was kind of surprising because, I mean, Mick seems to have kind of a favor towards veterans, and I thought he would kind of have done the de facto veteran move by having Kyle Washington in there. Instead, he had, you know, two underclassmen in there. To slow down Wichita State. And, like, to your point earlier, I mean, they had Connor Frankamp on the ball, Wichita State did, and Mick Cronin immediately put Nysir Brooks, a guy like a foot taller than him, on him, and he barely breezed the rim with a shot. Like, I never really understood that last sequence from Greg Marshall. I thought he would have drawn something up a little more creative than that.
Actually, like, you think with players like as good as Shamet and Morris, that like you would go to them, especially Shamet. Like, I guess, like, that's just not the type of like attitude Shamet has, where he's got to have the ball in his hands down the stretch, because, like, it's clearly not really his MO. But, like, I don't know, it's just kind of weird to see them go to Frankamp, who really had an off game, even though, like, I guess he is a senior. I don't know. I really didn't agree with that one either.
It was odd. I mean, you're only down one. At least, you know, even if you're going to get the ball into Frankamp, which makes sense, he's one of their team's best, better ball handlers, try to get it underneath the, like, Shaq Morris or something. I mean, he only had a one foul, and again, you're only down one. You know, at least if he goes up, he has a chance for free throws. I don't know. It screamed of desperation, I guess, is what I'm trying to say. And that's something you don't normally see it out of a Greg Marshall team. But, I mean, regardless, you see one. It was a great win. But
that does play into, like, what Cronin was doing, putting the bigs down on Morris, who was, like, a big guy, like, he's good. Like, height-wise, he's listed as 6'8", but he's probably, what, like, 6'6", 6'7".
Like, probably, yeah.
You throw, like, Brooks, who's, like, a legit, like, 6'10". Even, I don't know, I think he's listed, like, 6'11", or 7 feet. Like, you throw, like, those big guys on him. And, like, it makes it a little bit harder on him to get a clean look. So, yeah, I don't know why they didn't go to Morris either. See, like, to just put a bow on that one. Like, he dominated UC twice. And yep. I think the biggest, like, question, like, you'd have to have coming out of that game is kind of the shot selection again. At least the threes. Because you see, like, shot threes really terribly against Wichita State.
Okay, you mean yesterday? You mean the entire team or just Kyle Washington?
I don't think, okay, really nobody had like a good game shooting threes. Even like Evans was 3-9. Washington won like 1-6. Cumberland was only 1-3.
Cumberland had the most wide open three he's ever going to see in his career, and he completely missed everything except for the backboard. So you're right. I think the shot selection was okay. Except for Kyle Washington. Kyle had a hand in his face every time he shot a three. And he just happened to make 1 of 6.
And they did leave him open, like, quite a bit. It's like, oh, go ahead, take that shot. And he definitely did. Like, in the two games against Wichita State, they went 13 of 44 from three. So, like, yeah, probably not the best thing.
Yeah, and to kind of to put a bow on the game, I mean, I think we kind of agree it was obviously the best win of the season, but it was kind of that getting over the hump moment for UC. You know, they had opportunities earlier against Xavier, against Florida, on the road. They had opportunity against Wichita State at home. They had an opportunity against Houston on the road. Arguably, four of their five hardest games they played, this toughest games they played this season, and they lost each and every one of those, and it was kind of putting questions into the doubters' minds, like, can Mick Cronin really take this team far in the NCAA tournament, given that adversity, and given the kind of caliber of teams he's going to face, not at fifth third, or, well, not fifth third, but, you know, the home court at BB&T Arena, and it really put a lot of questions, it put a lot of naysayers and those questions to bed, By beating a Wichita State team of that caliber on the road in a hostile environment, and doing so, I mean, it was obvious it was the closest win they're gonna probably see, but it was still a win, and it was a win that UC, you know, hung with them for the entirety of the game and came out on top.
Yeah, like just like atmosphere wise, and. Like, just, like, pressure-wise, like, definitely the toughest game of the season. Like, I think the atmosphere for that game was a little bit more intense than the Xavier game. Because that crowd was ready. Like, that team was ready. It was senior day for them. Like, obviously, because it was the last game. And, like, with so much on the line. Like, you lose, you're the 2 seed. Like, you win the title outright. And then they came through and delivered and pulled out, like, definitely the biggest win of the season. Like, when it mattered the most. And like, I think it really is going to solidify them. It's like definitely a 3 seed. Like maybe they have a chance to get up on that 2 line if they keep winning and some teams go down in the conference tournaments. Like, yeah, just like a great like, overall win. And like, it has to be right up there with like the Syracuse win in the Big East tournament a couple years ago for like the best win of the Cronin era period. I guess the Florida State game would have to be up there too, since that put them in the Sweet 16.
Yeah, I think Florida State, Syracuse. I think you definitely put them up there. Marquette a few years ago seems like a pretty good win. God, I don't know. It would definitely a defining win for UC, at least for this season. Especially because it locked down that title outright. I honestly went into that game thinking if they come out of this with the co-championship again, I will be so disappointed. I mean, it'd be fine, better than having no championship, but I want it outright, and they did it, and I'm happy.
Yeah, especially since just dropping that game puts them at the 2 seed, like as mentioned, and you have to go through Houston again, which was something that they really like that didn't need to avoid. But the other side of the bracket is so much like easier. It's like, yeah, just getting a chance to go through like the easy path, hypothetically, like really helps out.
Absolutely. Yeah. So we can jump to that in a little bit, but do you have any other thoughts on this game?
Nope. That was it from me.
Okay.
What about you? Do you have any more thoughts?
No, I'm good. I am talked out about Wichita State. I hope we see them on Sunday. Going to the awards, UC didn't sweep, but they cleaned up pretty damn well. Gary Clark won Defensive Player of the Year, Sportsmanship Award, the Participation Award, essentially. He also walked away with Player of the Year, which we can talk about in a second. He was a first-team All-AAC. Jacob Evans was first-team All-AAC. Kyle Washington was an honorable mention. I also have a couple questions with you on that one as well. It hasn't been officially declared as official, but Mick Cronin was named the Sporting News Coach of the Year. I miss anything? I think that was it. I feel like that was a laundry list. I hope I got everything.
I think you did. Yeah, UC really cleaned up. Like wins pretty much every award. Like you think they would win. Gary Clark, not just like first team All AAC, like a unanimous selection. The only unanimous selection, which is like kind of hard to believe, but because you thought. Maybe like a Shamit or a Rob Gray or like Morris or Evans would also end up with unanimous. But no, just Gary Clark, which kind of cemented he would win Player of the Year. So they wait like 3 days to announce he wins Player of the Year, which I don't know. It's kind of annoying.
And to that was my question there. Go ahead. Finish your thought and I have a question.
The only thing they miss out on is Coach of the Year, which went to Kelvin Sampson, which kind of like a lot of people seem to think would happen.
Yeah, Coach of the Year first. I definitely think Kelvin Sampson deserved that. I think you could have made a case for either Mick Cronin or Kelvin Sampson. I mean, there's no reason that the coach that leads the team to the regular season championship and the number one seed in the conference tournament shouldn't be in the discussion for Coach of the Year. But, I mean, Houston was picked to finish sixth. In the conference, no one really expected much of Houston this season. We all kind of expected it to be Wichita State, SMU, UC, with maybe UCF and Temple dabbled in there a little bit. But Sampson took them to a top 25 seed, a top 25 ranking, nearly a conference championship, a 3 seed in the tournament, and secured them a seed in the NCAA tournament. I think he definitely deserved the Coach of the Year honors because of that.
Yeah, I do too. Like 14-4, like the progress they had in year 3, and it just shows like how hard it is for Mick Cronin to win that award, because I don't think he's like ever gonna do it again.
Yeah, the problem is because the expectations for UC are like UC would probably have to be picked to finish like third or fourth, you know, which you know maybe would happen next year with UC losing some key components. And then he'd have to end up winning the league to really win that award. That's really the only, like, based on this precedent that's been set, that's really the only way he can win the award going forward, it seems like.
Yeah, they'd have to go, like, undefeated in the conference and win it by, like, 4 games.
That too, yeah. Yeah, something like that. But to Gary Clark, so I actually had a little concern coming into Wednesday when the Player of the Year award happened. I mean, I knew up until then Gary was the only unanimous pick for all AAC first team. He had won Defensive Player of the Year, the Sportsmanship Award. But because he won Defensive Player of the Year, I was worried they were going to give Player of the Year to Rob Gray. And I know that was pretty irrational to think, but there was a thought in the back of my mind that, oh God, Gary already won a Player of the Year award, except on defense. Are they just going to give Rob Gray the Player of the Year? Did you ever have those thoughts?
I kind of thought that Shamit was going to win it going into the weekend. But like once the teams came out, like it was just clear Gary Clark had it with like by being unanimous, just like Sean Williams had it by being unanimous all rookie team. It's like I think we saw that even on the awards last year, like where if one person's unanimous, they're definitely winning the Player of the Year or Rookie of the Year. It's like once that came out, I was like, no doubt he was going to win it, which was like really great to see, like a clean sweep. Who knows if he wins Defensive Player of the Year if Taco Fall doesn't get injured, but he did get injured, and Gary Clark goes out with a bunch of awards after being like a kind of like an unheralded player in like a sense. His first three seasons, he goes out as like the guy carrying every single trophy. Like conference championship trophy, Player of the Year, Defensive Player of the Year, what was it, like Sportsmanship Award, whatever that is. Yeah, just
participation trophy.
Just like cleans out the trophy case, and really puts a cap on a really great career. And he's only got one more conference trophy to pull down before he aims for the bigger one.
And I mean, it could be there are rumblings that he could be an All-American, not a first-team All-American, but potentially second-team All-American. I think it's only Gary. I don't think Jacob Evans is on an All-American list, but it would be nice to see Gary get an All-American accolade.
Yeah, he definitely should be on one of the All-American teams. Like I think, almost hands down, he should be.
Right.
Like definitely, probably not first team to your point, but he's like definitely a second team or third team All-American. I don't think there's 15 players in the country that are better than Gary Clark.
And the thing is like you don't really. It's easy to measure All-Americans or All-Conference players by the points they put up or rebounds, assists, shooting percentage, that kind of stuff. And I mean Gary's numbers are good. They're 12.7 and 8.2, but he's not like wowing you. He wasn't even first on the team in points per game. That one goes to Jacob Evans. But it's interesting that he cleaned house in the awards by doing all of those things that coaches notice, but the statisticians don't necessarily record as much as they probably should. Deflections. Being in the right place on defense, switching on defense, covering the right guy, getting in a guy's face, making an impact off of the stat sheet, which is why Gary cleaned up so well in the AAC awards. So it's good. It's really encouraing that we are seeing a person of that, athletic and ethical caliber, doing so well at the end of his senior career.
And it definitely seemed like a bit of a career achievement award for Gary Clark as well. Because, just to play, I guess, devil's advocate a bit, if, somebody had, a tremendous season, like Semi did last year, they probably would have won the award. But, nobody really stood out, in league play. Nobody was, really amazing. With really eye-popping stats, Daniel Hamilton or, Nick Moore from, past seasons.
Right.
Or even going back Boatwright or anybody like that. It was just a pretty solid year for everybody. And Gary Clark, clearly so important to this team. And everybody saw it. And he really had, I think, his best overall statistical season. And just the overall impact he had on the team, which was the best team in the league all season long, from game one to game 31. Yeah. Just really a team achievement award, to their MVP.
Yeah, I totally agree on all counts. And the one question I did have coming in or with the awards was, or I guess not the awards, but the teams that were announced. I mean, Kyle Washington, he had a solid season. He was picked to finish on the All-AAC second team along with the other Bearcats, which was they were hilariously wrong with those predictions. But he didn't get on the second team. He only got an honorable mention. Was that surprising to you at all?
Not really, because like I don't know who you would bump off the second team, which was like pretty much all guards in Junior E2. Like Junior E2 had for Tulsa a tremendous season. Like what they were really good down the stretch. Like he had great numbers all year. Like Jalen Adams had the numbers. Melvin Frazier had a really great season. Like he was the most improved player. Jeremiah Martin. I guess you could like put like maybe like he shouldn't have made it since he missed a few games. But he really had a good year for Memphis. And then, like, Shake Milton. Well, I guess you could give the same, like, injury knock to. But, like, Shake Milton, like, I think Doug definitely the most talented player in the league, just with his skills. So, I can't see, like, too big a case for Washington not making it. Or, like,
sure, and
or like Quentin Rose, like, who I guess would be, the only other guy you'd be like, oh, like, that guy should have made it. But
right.
It's hard to really bump anybody off the list, especially since they just went for stats on the second team.
Yeah, and I agree with that on all counts. That was one area where UC kind of underperformed based on their preseason predictions. So it was just something I noticed, and it was just interesting. But I kind of agree. Kyle Washington had a solid season, but you know, at least he got his name up there as an honorable mention. Do you have anything else about the awards and the teams?
Yeah, I think the interesting thing about the awards is, like, out of the, like, everybody mentioned, like, even going to the honorable mentions, like, all upperclassmen, like, juniors and seniors, Landry Shamet, redshirt sophomore, so a third-year player, the only, like, only one sophomore, like, true sophomore, and it was Quentin Rose, got named to any of the teams. Like, none of the freshmen, like, really had great years. And I'm like, well, I think we've seen like some of them slot on at least the second team in the last couple of years. Like Sean Williams, like unanimous choice for the rookie of the year. It's like he had good numbers, but he only averaged like 12 points a game. And he was like by far the best like freshman of the class. So it really makes you wonder like what kind if there's like going to be a talent dip next season or if this just was
a
developmental class for the rest of the league.
Yeah, I mean that's a good question. Very very senior heavy. Very senior upperclassmen heavy teams. But I feel like we kind of see that every year. I feel like it's rare to see like a freshman or sophomore jump into that list. So I don't know. I don't know if it'll be an issue or not.
I don't know either. It'll be interesting to see what happens in the next year.
Right.
I'm trying to look up to see who won it last year. And it was, KJ Lawson, who's obviously not in the league anymore. So,
what do you have anything else to talk about with the awards?
No, let's move on to the conference tournament, which technically kicked off yesterday. But
It didn't technically kick off, it did kick off.
But the lower teams played, so did it really kick off yesterday? No. it starts today with Cincinnati playing. And like that's just where I'm going to stand on that one.
Perfect.
Quick results. SMU beat UConn. They had a big lead, SMU did. UConn stormed back, but didn't have enough down the stretch to win. Memphis held off South Florida.
Real quick on that is, I mean, we're within 24 hours of that of that loss by UConn, and Kevin Ollie hasn't been fired yet. Does he survive through the weekend?
I don't know. That's gotta be a tough one. I kind of wouldn't be surprised if he got fired next week.
They got to get rid of him. Like, they were running the numbers. I saw, like, on Twitter, some UConn fan was running the numbers. And it was like something between firing Kevin Ollie and his assistants and, you know, paying their buyouts and paying the buyouts of the school, of the coach they poached, and then paying that coach's salary. It's something like UConn spent something like $14 or $15 million that whole process. Most of it going to Kevin Ollie because he signed the, they gave him a ridiculous contract. But God, he has just run that program into the ground. Anyways, go ahead. That was my little Kevin Ollie rant.
Like, that buyout could be something like they work out, like try to get that like lower, or like that's what like you ask your big donors, like, hey man. Or, hey, woman, like, chip in and, like, help us get this buyout so we can get a good coach in. Yeah,
that's true.
It's going to come back to that, but that is an interesting point. Like, what do you do with Kevin Ollie? It seems like the clear answer is, like, get his ass out of there. Like, 14 and 19, they finish overall. Like, another dispiriting loss. They end up in the 8-9 game and get beat. Unceremoniously dumped from the AEC tournament. Yeah, I think it's time to cut bait on that one.
Yep.
Which brings us to the second game. Memphis beat South Florida by only 3 points. Like, I don't know what happened to Memphis where, like, South Florida is the one team that they cannot, like, game plan for. Like, they finished pretty well down the stretch, except for an inexplicable, like, but blowout loss at home to South Florida. Like, they finished, they like won like 5 of 6, and like the 6 was losing 75-51 to South Florida. Then they beat them 79-77 to keep.
Oh, they beat Houston. They beat Houston 91-85, and they lost to South Florida a week later by 20.
Just a extremely head scratching game, and. Like they go on to face Tulsa in the 4-5 game. What could be Tubby Smith's last game. Like Gary Parrish, who I guess is tied into the Memphis scene, like reported that like Tubby was on the way out. And like I wouldn't be surprised if they lose and then they announce he's fired. Even though like, I know there was like a little like backlash against that report. It's just kind of hard to see that. Like Memphis not going with Penny Hardaway and like trying to get their program back. I know like 21 season, like they're 20-12 right now, but it's got to be like one of the least inspiring 20-12 records maybe ever.
Yeah, when you load up your non-conference schedule with the likes of UAB, NKU, Mercer, Samford, I mean, when they announced it, it sounded weird that Penny Hardaway would potentially be the next head coach. I think Tubby Smith has done a pretty poor job this season coaching that team. And to your point, they lost to freaking South Florida at home by 24. They also lost to East Carolina on the road. I mean, he basically is rebuilding the program from scratch. I think they had, what, like 7 or 8, like, new players of the team, basically kind of like a Mick Cronin rebuild in a sense. He won 20 games, but they had some weird losses down the stretch, and their non-conference schedule was horrible.
And he chased off every single one of their good players from last season.
And that too. Like, the reason he was rebuilding so much was because he pissed everybody off. It was weird. I don't know. I'm not sure. I mean, it sounds like Penny Hardaway is a high school coach in the Memphis area, so I guess he has some experience, and obviously the guy is going to recruit the hell out of that program. But I see them firing Tubby Smith. I wouldn't be surprised if they did. I feel like they should. Penny Hardaway seems like a weird choice. I feel like Memphis could do better than that. Like, go after, like, I don't know, go after, like, Nick McDevitt or something like that. Like, go after NKU's head coach. Go after a head coach with a proven track record of winning at a lower level. I don't know. That's my opinion.
Like, on the surface, I agree with your point that you should go after somebody proven. But I don't know. I'm kind of in on the Penny thing. Like, he's an AAU coach. Like, his team is apparently really good. And, like, all the big-time players from Memphis are on his team. Like, that's a pretty talent-rich area. If they could, like, go back to locking down Memphis, so, like, was one of the big philosophies for, like, Calipari and Josh Pastner. They always had, like, big nationally, like, recognized classes. And in Calipari's case, like, a ton of success. Yeah, I think that that'd be something you can go after, especially if, like, the rumors of Larry Brown, like, joining his staff, which just seems weird.
Oh, please let that happen so they can just basically, like, death penalize that damn program.
But would they get the death penalty if Larry Brown was just an assistant coach? does that vacated wins happen when he's an assistant? We'd have to find out.
Well, we will see. Next time on all the bullshit that happens at the college basketball. I don't know. I see the Penny Hardaway thing as like another repeat of Patrick Ewing at Georgetown. I mean, Patrick Ewing had experience at a higher level. I mean, never as a head coach. I mean, associate head coach for the Bobcats. But they went 15-15 this year, had a completely awful non-conference schedule, and got murderized in the Big East. The Penny Hardaway things has feelings of a Patrick Ewing, you know, hiring an alum just because your donors loved him, you know, 20 years ago. I don't know. Memphis can do whatever they want. It just seems like a strange hire to me. I feel like they could aim higher. Like if UC came in, so let's say Mick Cronin, I don't know, left for whatever reason, and Mike Bone went out and said, hey, I'm going to target Kenyon Martin to be my next head coach. I would be like, okay, that seems fairly reasonable, I guess, but have you vetted these other head coaches who have proven themselves at a mid-major level? Like, that would be my response to that.
I could see, your point there. But I think, like, the thing that would really stand out is, like, he's already, like, got the area, like, on lockdown. Like, he's still a coach there. And, like, he never really left Memphis. And, like, it seems like they just need, like, that local guy to really heavily recruit that area. Because it seems like the biggest complaint people have is, like, all the talent getting out of Memphis. And them just, like, squandering, like, all these opportunities. Like, the Tubby Smith hire was just a clear mistake. Like, and maybe they should have hired him a couple years ago. After Pastner got a new job.
Yeah, I don't know. It was a... That had a very, very Tommy Tuberville feel when Tubby Smith took over.
Definitely, like, especially, I don't know, just like the way he just alienated like the Lawson family and just lost Markel Crawford, who was a really good player on their team last year, like just loses like everybody except for like Jeremiah Martin, who I don't think even think had a big part on their team last year. Like, yeah, just a crazy thing to happen. I think if it went poorly, it's like he would at least recruit. It's like the next coach would have something.
Well, it's dumb because he basically looked at the stock of recruits who were good recruits. I mean, one thing Pastner did well at Memphis was recruit, and he's like, nah, I got no use for you. I would rather start with nothing than have former 4-star recruits on my roster. It was odd.
It was very odd. And, like, just where Tubby Smith, like, was on, like, his coaching journey. Like, clearly going down. Like, I guess, he was turning Texas Tech around. They went from two losing records to making the tournament in his last year there. But, like, there wasn't, like, a ton of, like inspiration behind that. People weren't being like, oh, man, look at Texas Tech. They're on the way up. But it's like, people were mad that, like, Texas Tech wasn't better. And then, like, he left, and, like, they've been, like, pretty solid under Chris Beard. Especially this season, where, like, they're a clear tournament team.
Yeah, they're, like, they're a top 15 team or something. And you know, kind of to your point, maybe your point, I'm not sure if this was your point or not, but he was kind of turning around Texas Tech. He they didn't have the, you know, the explosion, you know, in year three that maybe people would have hoped. But who knows if he actually, you know, laid the building blocks that Chris Beard is building upon now. I don't know. We'll see what Memphis does. If they fire him, it makes sense to me. If they don't, I wouldn't be, you know, I wouldn't be surprised either, I guess.
Yeah, I wouldn't either. I would probably lean more towards, like, they're going to fire him.
Right.
Like, just look at Texas Tech's roster. Keenan Evans, like, senior, like, their best player. So, like, I guess, like, if Tubby Smith did one good thing for Texas Tech, it was bringing in Keenan Evans.
Right.
It was probably, like, it's kind of, like, a low-key chance to be an All-American. Let's move on to the... to the night session. Temple beat Tulane to get another chance at Wichita State, which is a pretty important game. Like, if like, there's a team that could be a spoiler and, like, be a bid thief, it's Temple's chances have to be at the top of the list. Because they...
Not Tulsa?
No, not Tulsa.
No, what? You take Temple over Tulsa.
I would take Temple over Tulsa. Like, do you think Tulsa's going to beat UC?
I'm just saying, like, if we're pitting the team with the best shot at sealing a bid, I would put it on Tulsa over Temple.
Temple beat Wichita State, and Temple beat Houston, I think.
Yeah. Okay. That's fine. I'm just okay. Go ahead.
So Temple got swept by Houston. But, yeah, I would still go with them because I like their offense. And, like, there's a chance Houston loses in the conference tournament. Yeah. I think there's a better chance Houston loses to UCF than Cincinnati loses to SMU or Tulsa.
Oh, absolutely.
So, like,
If Houston doesn't score more than 40 points or 45 points in that game, Central Florida's going to win that game.
And Temple, like, was taking it to Wichita State at Wichita State before, like, they blew a big lead. It's like they probably have confidence they can beat them.
Yeah.
I guess, like, the big thing is, like, that at least that's a night game. Like, I put UC on a bit higher upset alert, I guess. Like, although not very high. In the SMU game, because that's at noon. And, like, we saw in the early game yesterday that the atmosphere was not rollicking. Orlando.
Right. No, the 32 people in the crowd did not create much of a good environment for basketball. but we can jump ahead to today. So, Nooner, UC tips off. To your point, this is the real tournament. This is when the start of the tournament is, because UC actually plays, and they will play SMU at noon for a chance to take it to the semifinals tomorrow at 1:00. They will play with a winner, if they beat SMU, of Memphis and Tulsa that are at 2:00, and then the nightcap has Temple and Wichita State and UCF in Houston. Real quick, do you see any upsets potentially here? I know you kind of mentioned Temple over Wichita State, but do you see, you know, the other three, any upsets there?
I see chalk for the conference chalk tournament. I guess SMU without Milton, I don't think it's going to beat UC.
Right.
The Bearcats handled them pretty easily twice, even with Milton. It will take a performance where SMU just is hot from three, like they were against UConn. And UC was a bit sluggish to start and just can't get out of the hole. Memphis Tulsa, kind of a toss-up, but I'll just go with Tulsa because of how they played down the stretch. Like, I think you have to lean like Wichita and Houston. Like Houston, I would have on a bit of more, like, definitely the biggest upset alert. So just because, like, UCF plays a tough style of defense that, like, in a tournament setting is not really something you want to go up against.
Right. Yeah, I totally agree. I think it'll probably be mostly chalk. I will concede that I could see Temple beating Wichita State, so fine, I said it. But I think today... I think Tim Jankovic has done a hell of a job with SMU. Just the fact that they're over 500 was basically like six scholarship players in any given game being able to play for him is a hell of an effort. But I just don't think they have the horses to keep up with UC. I mean, who knows what's happening with Evans' ankle or his leg, lower extremity, like we said earlier. But I don't think they have the horses to take down UC. And, I mean, to your point, Tulsa's been playing really well down the stretch. Houston's been playing really well, though. If they don't score, I don't think if they run into issues, it's going to be a problem for them against Central Florida. But I think it's going to be mostly chalk.
Maybe I'm sleeping on Tulsa too much. Like, they were 11-10, like, going into February. Then, like, they finished the year 19-11. Their only loss was to UC in a game, like, they kind of dominated the first half, like, and really gave UC a ton of fits. So, I guess, like, yeah, Tulsa does have a chance. Like, if there was a bid thief, like, Tulsa's road, to your point earlier, definitely easier, right? Because they have the easiest, like, quarterfinal game against Memphis, who was, like, probably the worst team left, even though they're the 5 seed. I guess SMU would be the worst team left. But there's just, like, talent-wise, I think you would say Memphis was last.
Yeah, I agree with that.
Especially without Martin. So if, like, they make the semifinals, like, they can take down UC. Like, a toss-up against Wichita or Houston. Or even UCF. Like, I don't know. I kind of think UCF may have a chance to crash the finals.
Yeah, I think I could probably see any. I mean, I think it's chalk. I think it's gonna be UC and Wichita State in the final, and then basically a coin flip from there. But yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if, like, Tulsa or Houston snuck in. I don't see SMU or Memphis taking it down, but I could see Temple or UCF potentially sneaking in too. Who do you have in the finals? We're kind of up against it, but who do you have in the finals, and what do you think UC winds up as a bid on Sunday?
Since you picked Wichita State, I'll go to Houston. UC Houston finals. UC taking it down.
Nice.
I think UC will end up with a 2 seed. I think they'll pull off the 2 seed. Like, so obviously everybody's getting the quadrant 1 wins, but, like, just making it to the title game, I think, is enough for them to get a 2 seed, especially with, like, the volatility on, like, the 2-3 line, like, in this conference tournament play. Because, like, obviously one of Tennessee and Auburn is going to lose. So,
agreed.
Like, there's a big chance right there.
Yeah, I think they're basically their floor is a 3 seed. If they win today, they get a 2 seed. If they win today, they have a chance. They have a good chance at a 2 seed. If they make it to Sunday, then they've locked down the 2 seed.
I guess the only real knock would be, like, they don't play a tournament team until the final. But just making the final, I think, would be fine, because they put the last game on Sunday, which we already found out, like, it doesn't matter. So just getting
it doesn't
to the
matter
final,
at all.
Just
stupid.
Getting to the final is good enough, and we both think they're gonna pull it down.
Exactly. And, you know, hoping they get a 2 seed, hoping they also get a bid either in, I mean, I'm hoping for Nashville. Because I've never been to Nashville. I definitely want to make that road trip for these tournament games. Or Detroit or Pittsburgh, something where, you know, UC fans can fill up the arena. And that's all I have on that.
Yeah, definitely. And we'll throw a podcast at you next week. So thanks for joining us, and go Bearcats.